Welcome to the Live to Die podcast. My name is Michelle Dragon, and I wrote Live to Die, the Birthday Death Day Planning Process to help people prepare for death. Live to Die is a comprehensive guide to lifelong death planning. It will cover medical, legal, financial, and spiritual issues. I consider the different death timelines from sudden death to controlled death. Ultimately, I will encourage you to complete 5 tasks. That's your first responsibility. And then I will motivate you with strategies and techniques to help the people around you to also plan their deaths. That's your second responsibility. The Live to Die motto is honor your life by planning the best death you can. Part 2. First responsibility. Plan your own death. 1. Who will look after you as you die? Filial duty and the death pod. 2. What will happen to you and others if you don't plan your death? Explore 4 questions: medical, legal, financial, and spiritual. Consider 5 death timelines: sudden death, death in days, death in months, death in years, and controlled death. Complete 5 tasks: medical insurance, durable power of attorney for health care or the medical directive, a will and a trust, post-death financial assurance, in other words, life insurance and savings, death pod, and death wishes. Death, the ultimate individual event, demands the ultimate in human community. If you and those around you want to experience a good death, as much as we humans like to consider ourselves independent, we are really communal, hive-like creatures whose relationships are inextricably tangled and interdependent. To make sure that you and those around you have a good death, you will need to respond to 2 interdependent areas of responsibility. First responsibility, plan your own death. Second responsibility, help others plan their deaths. My assumption is that you love yourself and that you love the others in your family and your close friends and that you are willing to act as a reflection of your love. While you might say you love yourself and the other human beings that are close to you, if you are not willing to act consistently and purposefully over time to plan your deaths, then your love is not as powerful as it could be. How powerful is your love? Is it enough to overcome your fear of death? In this section, part 2, we will explore your first responsibility. In part 3, we will explore your second responsibility. First responsibility, plan your own death. Who will look after you as you die? Filial duty and the death pod. It's all about me. Well, not quite. Although I am assuming that self-interest is the greatest motivator on the planet, I hope that there is love too. Love will make the death planning process less about you and make cooperation easier and kinder. Although self-interest will initially drive your actions to meet the first responsibility and the second responsibility, death planning will demand the ultimate in interdependent hive-like behavior, a quid pro quo of sorts, a reciprocation of intergenerational proportions. It may be all about you, but in order to get what you want, no matter what you want, be it big or small, while you are still alive or after you have died, whether someone helps you or you pay them, you will need other human beings to help you. You can see how love would help greatly to drive the motivation for this lifelong project. A contract of direct reciprocation is the most common contract in death planning. But there is a problem when you contract with any one person, say your spouse or child, any one. Once your partner in death planning dies, how will they look after you? Or if you die, how will you look after them? To solve this problem, you will need to invest in a multi-generational contract of reciprocation called the death pod. If your kids see you taking care of the elders in the family, then they will attend to the elders in their generation, and so on. This multi-generational reciprocation is called filial duty. It is an old-fashioned medieval term, balancing the duties of loyalty and honor with love within the family. The idea of filial duty can be extended beyond immediate family to extended family and close friends. Before socialized government, humans used to rely on immediate and extended family for support in life and death. Today, the illusion of independence that many see is really a dependence on a government structure which is not as loyal, honorable, or loving as family. Do you think you can count on Social Security, Medicare, adult day programs? Depends on who is in office as to whether or not these programs will be there to support you. Not so reliable. And no matter who helps, they won't hug or hold your hand like family and friends can. There are so many things we can't control with the government. I'd rather just work on being a loyal, honorable, and loving family member. As much as family can be complicated at times, it is the most reliable form of human interdependence that we have. And if you do not have a family to depend on, friends can be just as loyal as any family group. Religious and spiritual groups can provide individuals or groups of friends a perfect opportunity to start the death planning process. Your religious or spiritual leader will have helped many through the death process itself and will know from experience what planning is necessary. They would be happy to sit down, listen, and support you as you plan. They may even help you start a support group to move the process further and to provide others the opportunity to plan. So, to answer, who will look after you as you die? You have four choices. Family members, friends, private service paid by you or charitable donations, public institutions, taxpayer funded, where you end up if you don't plan. Your choices will change over time and situation. Consider your possible futures. Your spouse might not be able to care for you. You might be divorced, widowed, or single by choice. Your kids might be busy at the time of your demise. Your friends are too sick or elderly to help. Geographical moves due to finances, health, and family leave you alone. What would you do in any of these situations? Who would be your go-to person if your life situation changes? So the question, who will look after me as I die, is time and situation sensitive, which is why the first responsibility will need to be addressed over and over again, say, every birthday. At some point, you will need to take filial duty seriously. You will need to make it real. You will need to sit down and formally invite 2 to 5 people into your death pod. I will discuss ways to do that in Part 4, the death pod. And Part 5, Live to Die's birthday, death day, annual planning process. A death pod should consist of at least 2 people who are willing to formally help you plan your death and also help you if you find yourself entering the death process. Formally means consciously and concretely. It is appropriate to be a generally supportive family member, but it is important to have specific conversations with specific people who you think will be there for you, or you for them, so that they know you have such an expectation, and vice versa. Nothing has to be in writing, unless that is something you all choose to do. The most important action a death pod will take is to talk, or write, about how they will fill out their birthday, death day, annual planner. Minimally, you should plan to meet once a year. In the beginning, you may need to have more meetings as you work through the death planning process for the first time. You may need to swap emails on various topics as you research options and plan actions. Part of your responsibility as a death pod member will be to remind each other to make adjustments to your death plans mid-year, if necessary, at the point of some major life change, such as marriage, birth, moving, death. What expectations should you have for committing to a death pod? Going down this rabbit hole can mean a lot of things, from making sure your kids have filled out their medical directive to changing granny's diaper. What are you capable of? Physically, intellectually, emotionally, what can you reasonably expect from others? What do others expect from you? What services should you prepare to pay for? Answers will come only from exploring the medical, legal, financial, and spiritual questions with your death pod. Expectations and commitments will ebb and flow through time. Death pod membership should be flexible and adjustable to accommodate change, but not so much change as would reflect a lack of commitment. There may be personal problems arise within the death pod that may or may not have anything to do with the death pod's purpose. But if the problem makes death planning communication ineffective, then let go of each other graciously. Life is long. You may come to find yourselves together again. Your death pod will change over time as people move or as responsibilities change our ability to commit or as conflicts ebb and flow. A strong death pod based on love and moderate self-interest will engender trust that will encourage communication as you address conflicts regarding death and life. Strong communication is the heart of every death pod. It will allow conflicts to be resolved more easily and more effectively. A death pod is a little like being stranded with others in an elevator after an earthquake while the building is on fire. You all work together to survive. As a death pod, you are also addressing life and death full on. The threat is just not so immediate or apparent. Any life and death experience with other human beings intensifies the intimacy of the relationship, engendering a feeling of understanding and trust. You will be forced to face things that are difficult and even emotionally painful as you work with your death pod. It will be a hard ride for some and harder for some than others. Share the fear, offer love and support, and it will get easier over the years. Fear can lead to inaction. A group like the death pod works well to stop inaction, whether the inaction is due to the excuse of psychological paralysis or procrastination. If you are a procrastinator, you are blocking fear. Kind of like going la 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 with your fingers in your ears, only disguised as a benignly busy modern adult life. The building is still on fire. How many life and death movies or books have you watched or read where characters in crisis situations are too busy or apathetic to act to save themselves? None. And notice how we can't hold our breath to kill ourselves either. We are hardwired to live. And although death is the great antagonist to our daily breath, it can lurk quietly for years and years without attention. Only an immediate threat can guarantee a human being will produce immediate action to save themselves. Procrastination of death planning is easy, as the threat is less immediately apparent. Working as a group, a death pod is less likely to procrastinate, as not everyone will ignore the fire. You can belong to more than one death pod, and death pods can overlap. Overlapping and redundancy is good. My father lives in Sun City, Roseville, California, and let me tell you, his peers were very helpful during my mom's death. Lots of overlapping between her peer groups, mine, and his. For an intergenerational death pod based on filial duty and friendship, overlapping with family and friends is a necessity.